Thank you. I'd like to thank him for the nice introduction, and particularly for saying broad in interests, not just plain broad. Also, you know, of course, I've heard of the Institute here, and a very, very prestigious group, but I didn't realize how prestigious until I came up here. I mean, after all, what other group, I don't know of any other group, they could prolong the presidential elections just so that my lecture would be topical. That is impressive. So I didn't remember my title, so here I wrote down why mathematical procedures can create a mess. A mathematician economist looks at elections. And really it comes down to the fact of that old curse, may you live in interesting times. And boy, do we live in interesting times right now. It's a time when we're discovering a tremendous pragmatic civics lesson. When you vote, it doesn't mean your ballot is counted. And we've had our vocabulary improved. We're all learning about chads, hanging chads, dangling chads, pregnant chads, and dimples, and everything else you can imagine. But really, we may be focusing on the wrong thing. Maybe the mess that we have is due to something else. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. Now, whenever I say this, people immediately say, yeah, sure, it's that darn Electoral College. We got that darn Electoral College. That's the problem after all. Look, Gore got most of the votes, and now it looks like Bush is going to have most of the electoral votes. Let's change it. Folks, we're looking in the wrong place. The Electoral College never will be changed. What we have in the Electoral College are 538 votes. You know where they come from? Each state gets one for each congressperson you have, and one for each senator. And then there is three for the District of Columbia. Now, that means we have 435 representatives. Anyone have an idea why we have 435 representatives? Why that weird number, 435? Time permits, I'll show you why. Time permits, I'll show you why at the end. But I'm going to tell you right now, it comes from chaos. It is an example. It's one of the earliest pragmatic example of chaos that I know of. And I'll show it to you in a while. But we'll never get rid of the Electoral College. And the reason we won't get rid of the Electoral College is very simple. It was a small state, large state compromise in our Constitution. Now, did you see those pictures of Bush and Gore up in Green Bay, Wisconsin? I mean, Green Bay, Wisconsin? There's only us Finns that can go in an area that's that cold, and yet they were there. If we got rid of the Electoral College and had the popular vote, all of the politicians would hang out from here down to San Diego, from Milwaukee all the way through Chicago and into Detroit, and then down on the East Coast. They wouldn't bother going to South Dakota, North Dakota, any other place. Worse yet, when it comes time for the goodies when you're elected, you know those 4 years because campaigning starts the day after? Where do you think the goodies are going to go? California knows. You've got a lot of goodies over the last 8 years. And the goodies would not go to the small states, and they're well aware of it. There have been about 800 attempts, I told you, and it never will pass because it has to go through the constitutional amendment process. The small states will just simply say no. So I just want to get that out of the way because everybody always asks me about, what about the Electoral College? Forget it. It's not going to happen. But you know, Tony was telling me about a party he had a while back. And he said that what they did is he recognized that it was cheaper if you buy one beverage. And so it was party time. And so what he did is he asked the people, well, what do you want to drink? And six of them said, we want milk. If milk's not available, well, how about some wine? If wine's not available, beer. Five were beer drinkers. And then wine or milk. And four people were wine drinkers. California, after all. And they were wine drinkers. So you know what's going to happen. The election outcome is obvious. Milk gets six votes, beer gets five, wine gets four, and there's your election outcome. So he went down for the 15 people, down to the local beverage store to buy a keg of milk. What happens is they said, good thing you didn't want beer, because the mathematicians were here, and they drank up all the beer. So if we have an election between milk and wine, because beer's gone, well, yeah, it's obvious. At first and last place, it's clear that milk wins, right? Or is it obvious? Let's take a look. If we compare milk versus wine, well, we get 6 votes for milk, 5 votes for wine, 4, oh my, by 9-6, wine is preferred to milk. Now let's try beer and milk. 6 people vote for milk, 5 people vote for beer, and these 4 people are going to vote for beer. So what we have here is a phenomenon where the first place milk, the people prefer anything to the winning alternative. Now let's take a look at something else. What that says then, let's take a look at wine and beer. If we look at wine and beer, well, these 6 people prefer wine over beer. These 5 people are beer drinkers, and these 4 like wine. By 2-1, they prefer wine to beer. What you have then, folks, is that the election outcome says wine is in first, beer's in second, milk is in first, excuse me, wine's in last, and pairwise comparisons gives you the exact opposite. With one procedure, milk is the winner, the other procedure, wine is the winner. And I happen to know that he's a beer drinker, don't you? Please say yes, yeah, say yes, say yes, say yes, please, please, he's a beer drinker. Oh, well, then he's definitely a beer drinker. And what happens is that he wants to know how in the world can we get beer to be the winner? Quite easy. You have a runoff. At the first time, what do? Is we drop wine and we have a difference between milk and beer wins. What we have is a very, as an innocuous, very simple example, a trivial example. Nowhere near as complicated as in your departmental politics, and you know how vicious that can be. What happens is that each alternative can win if we use a different procedure. And what we have then is a disturbing phenomenon that an election outcome can more accurately reflect the election procedure. Can more accurately reflect your election procedure rather than what the people want. Okay, that's fine if you're going to talk about hypothetical examples, and we can concoct those, but what about real-world examples? Can you come up with a real-world example where this has happened? Yeah, not too hard at all. Our presidential election. Our presidential election, the stalemate we are in, is not a reflection of anything else but what we had. In fact, on election day morning, in the newspapers across the country, Doonesbury had a cartoon. And in Doonesbury cartoon, he says, if you would like to see abortion recriminalized, unrestrained logging and drilling, and soft money in politics, the choice is clear. Vote for Nader. Okay? The phenomena that we had really is the fact that instead of having a two-person election between Gore and Bush, we had a four-person election. Remember, Buchanan was in there too. And the other cartoonist that picked up on it, a couple of days later, a father trying to explain to his young son why mommy and daddy are having big arguments. It's not our fault or your fault. Whose fault is it? It's a very bad man named Ralph Nader. So what we have then is that it's really not Nader's fault. Anyone should be able to run for president, including me. Anyone, you should be allowed to vote for whoever you want. But the fact is that we need more sophisticated election procedures. The problem is the election procedures. That is really what the issue happens to be. For example, suppose we had the following. Suppose you had to win a majority of vote to get the electoral votes from the state of California or any other state. Majority vote. A lot of states, nobody would get it. Definitely Florida. But if you had something called an instant runoff, and I'm just giving you one procedure, we're going to look at others in a few seconds. You had an instant runoff. Everybody writes down their first place and their second place candidate. You look at the first place votes, you have a majority. You have a majority, that person wins. Nobody has a majority, you drop your two lowest candidates, we go back to the ballots, and if your first place was, we go to your second place. And we count those ballots. We had done that, the election would be over a long time ago, about a day later at longest, and the winner would have been Gore. That's because in Florida alone, they predict of the 100,000 votes for Buchanan, about 70,000 margin would have gone to Gore. Whether you're a Gore supporter or not, what you do is you see there are ways around this problem. And I want to tell you, give you a little clue on how to find other examples where things go wrong. And then I'm going to get into the mathematics of how we discover them, how we explain them. To go into some, sure, go ahead. Yes, right. And so what we need, you're absolutely correct. His question is a very good one. He says, but you're saying something goes wrong. He says there is a question of, is there a correct answer? And I'm coming to that toward the end. Precisely correct. What we need to do is we need to understand what are the voters' wishes. And we need some way of trying to capture that. And in the lecture I had the word, title I had the word symmetry, and that's where the word symmetry will come in. But that's exactly a stumbling point for this field. Is what are the choices for the people, and some of the procedures they've used, I've since shown, are nonsense. About trying to determine who really should be the winner. Let me give you a clue of trying to determine how to find actual elections when you read the newspaper where something goes wrong. I am was at Northwestern for 3 decades. Let's suppose that the Northwestern marching band, 100 strong, in January, decide they want to go on a common vacation, winter vacation. 40 of them have discovered the joys of where I grew up, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, along the shores of Lake Superior. It was so cold up there, where I grew up. It was so cold that in January, we had to go south to warm up. We would go for a couple of days down to Minneapolis to warm up. That's how cold it was up there. And what happens is that the other 60 of the 100 member band wants to go where it's warm, to the Caribbean, so they can walk on the beaches. Where? I don't know. 35 of them say, how about the Bahamas? The other 25 say, what about Jamaica? You have a vote. 40 vote for the Upper Peninsula. 35 vote for the Bahamas, 25 vote for Jamaica, and they put on their long underwear and they go north. It's clear in this situation that you have a situation where it's not reflecting the voters' wishes. Let's have another example, speaking of band vacation, a place called Minnesota. I don't know if you noticed, but 2 years ago they had a gubernatorial election. In this election they had Skip Humphrey, who just won a $6 billion victory over the tobacco industries, was incredibly popular. We had his protege, Norm Coleman, who was a well-known seasoned politician. And then we had, with feather boa and everything else, Jesse the Body Ventura. Now what we had is, by looking at the ballots and everything else and all the information I can have, is we had a band vacation type situation. We had where about a little over 60% of the people wanted a seasoned politician, either Coleman or Humphrey. Don't forget we're talking Minnesota. In Minnesota, you know, from Garrison Keillor, where people are more than average and everything else, there's the Norwegian bachelor farmers, they're very, very stable people. And 40%, actually 37%, wanted to have the charismatic, and he's highly charismatic, person And from everything I can find, this is exactly what happened. Yes? Ventura, yeah, there were indications of this. In fact, Ventura on election day stated that even though I lost, I won. He came out with comments stating this and doing so. In other words, if you notice, I was very careful how I stated the question, because I got a lot of data, but the trouble is that it's not, we don't have data where everybody lists down what is their first, second, third. But there are indications from everything that either of the other two candidates would have easily have beaten Ventura. Yeah. So let me just jump down to a couple of others. Let me take the state of Louisiana. That's one of my favorites also. Another gubernatorial election in 1992. In 1992, Romer was running for re-election. Romer was not overly popular. He did good things, but he made some controversial decisions. But look at his opponents. Edwards, former Governor Edwards, who had been thrown, indicted for all of his on felonies for everything he did when he was governor before, and David Duke, head of the Ku Klux Klan. And there, the poll-wise material that I was able to get from Louisiana strongly indicated Romer would have beaten either of the other two in pairwise elections. But exactly as with Wine, he came in third, and we retreated to the Crooker Klan runoff election, where Edwards ran and then was immediately indicted, not long after, for fraud. And again. Just think about your organization. We have such trust in our election procedures and the election procedure which I'm talking about. You vote for your top place candidate, we never question it. Very seldom do we question. If we question it, we're questioning in terms of fraud or something else. But we don't question it. And I strongly believe, and I'm going to try to persuade you, first of all, with some of the bad evidence, and then with some of the evidence about what's good, getting to your question, that you should worry about it, and worry about it seriously. The same type of problems I'm talking about, elections are aggregations. When you're aggregating information in elections, it's a linear aggregation procedure. Exactly the same problems, actually more crop up, probability, statistics, economics, and on and on. They're aggregation procedures, except they're nonlinear, and the nonlinearities make the problems even worse. So everything I'm talking about here has a parallel in all of these other areas, and if time permits, I'll hint at some of them, but they're actually worse in these other mathematical areas. Now, when I was just starting to get interested, you know, I'm working on the n-body problem, everything else, and I'm starting to get interested in this thing called elections. And the question was that there were a couple of paradoxes that were in the literature, special examples. And the first issue a mathematician's going to ask is, can we find all of them? I see about four or five paradoxes which are constantly described in the literature. Can we find all possible paradoxes? Now, how in the world are you going to do that? So the approach that I adopted really comes from my roots in dynamical systems of chaos, chaotic dynamical systems. Because what was one of the real powers of chaotic dynamical systems? One of the real advances and real powers of chaotic dynamical systems is not the randomness and everything else that we constantly talk about, but a lot of the symbolic dynamics. A lot of the things which are able to characterize everything that can happen with simple tools. And I'm going to give you a quick, intuitive introduction into chaos and what I did, what tools I took. Remember, chaos, that's dynamical, homoclinic, heteroclinic, all those kind of clinic points, everything else. I can't do that, so I had to go one step earlier. The simplest dynamical system that we've ever encountered, or the first one anyway, is Newton's method for finding a zero of a function. What we do here is we start off with a guess. Darn, wrong. Wrong because the function's here. What am I going to do for the next guess? I can't use the function. If I could use the function, what would happen? I could have found the zero anyway. So I use a linear approximation. There's my second guess. Here's my third guess, with that straight line approximation, etc., and things converge pretty rapidly in to a zero. That's fine, that's dandy, but the next issue I want to ask you then is, all right, one, two, three, four, five, okay, that's enough. Here's a function. I'm going to use Newton's method, but I want to ask you, that function right there, what can happen? What can go right? What can go wrong? What do you think? What can go right? What can go wrong? Right is that it converges. What can go wrong? Where's Newton's? Okay, he's stating, look, it's possible that I'm going to have a period 2 point. Where I take a point here, goes here, and it never converges. I have a period 2 point. Anything else? How about you? Well, I picked that better. How about you? What else can go wrong? See, it's not an easy problem. It's not an easy problem to try to indicate what can go wrong. There are some things that can go wrong. If I choose this point, it goes off to infinity. Or this point, it goes off to infinity, so the procedure no longer is defined. But I'm going to now give you some information, and then I'm going to show you how to find everything that can happen here. Everything that can go wrong. All the periodic points and everything else. And really, that's nothing more than symbolic dynamics. If you're out here, if you're ever on this side right here, you always will converge to this point. Always. If you're ever out here, you always will converge to this point, if I had drawn the picture right. You always will converge to this point. The only thing that can happen is in here. Now, let's take a look. I'm going to call this region right here A, B, C. The traditional approach toward studying this, and Peter Henrici is where I learned a lot of this when I was a graduate student, is to select a point, P0, find where the next iterate is, next iterate, and find all these iterates. And what Henrici would do is, by use of a beautiful analysis, if P60 equals P0, or near P0, then I use fixed point type theorems to adjust the initial point so that they land on top of it, and I will have a period 60 orbit or something else. This is difficult work with limited results. The approach of symbolic dynamics goes the other way around. Rather than starting with a point and asking where does it go, see, if I take a point, I might say it starts in region A, it goes to region C, it goes to region C. Symbolic dynamics goes the other way around. It says, you tell me what you want for the future, and I will see if such a thing exists. Okay. So where should I start, region A, B, or C? Tell me any region. A, B, or C? B, okay? So he says he wants me to try to create an example which starts in region B, and then it goes to region C. And after that, it goes to region A. Okay, thank you. And then maybe B, and then A, and then A, and then B, and then it's whatever you want. Notice there's an uncountable number of possible things I could write down here. I claim that whatever sequence you put down there, I can create an example with that feature. Whatever example you put down. If it never repeats, if it's like an irrational number, then what is it doing? It's just plain never going to converge. Only the irrational numbers can have hope of converging. So let me show you how to do this. And this comes from my wasted days as a youth playing pool. You see, to try to create this example, rather than trying to create the whole thing, I'm going to do the following. Got the cue ball? I want to get the cue ball to hit the one ball. I want the one ball to hit the two ball to hit the three ball, etc. I'm no Minnesota Fats. I just can't go down and do what I want. First, I have to line up the cue ball to see how in the world do I hit the cue ball, so I'm going to hit the one ball. Right? I do the same thing here. Precisely the same thing here. What I do here is I want to find all points in B which will end up in C. All points in B which will end up in C. So let's find out. I want a point which lands right here. Okay, there's a point which will end up right there. And I want a point which ends up here. So there's that little interval right there. So I know just by construction that if I start any point in here, right, it's going to end up in here, somewhere in here, anywhere I want in there. So that's equivalent to my hitting the cue ball, so that if I hit the cue ball in that little region, I'll hit the one ball. Now I want to have the one ball hit the two ball. So I find, where do I have to hit the one ball to hit the two ball? So, where in region C will it go to A? Is what I'm asking. So, that's easy to find. Here's a point. Here's a point. So here are all the points. Let's make that a different color. Here are all the points in C that if I start in any point here, start here, goes to there, start here, it's going to go, let's see, start here, and it's going to go to here, start here, and it's going to go to there. So I'll cover everything in between. And you know what I'm going to do next. Next, I'm going to go back to the cue ball and find, where do I hit the cue ball? It's a refined image, so the cue ball will hit the one ball in the right place, so it hit the two ball. Right? Intuition. It wasn't to use wasted youth after all. So I want to find the set of points inside here. The set of points here will go to here, this will go to here, and I can continue any future from there. What do I have? Is I have a nested set of closed bounded sets, and I know there's going to be at least one point in the intersection. So I know there's at least one point that has the designated future. And I now know, since I can do this for any sequence, I know everything that can happen with Newton's method for five zeros. Now, this iterated inverse image approach, hitting the cue ball to hit the one ball, hitting the one ball to hit the two ball, etc., is precisely the type of thing which I use. That's the part of chaos which I use to try to analyze what happens in elections. Let me give you an example, and then I'll give you the theorem. Here I have an election. I got, how many people I got? 9 people preferring A, 8 people B, 7 people C, 6 people D. So the outcome is A, B, C, D. That's going to be one of my iterates, right? Region A that I have. Now what I want to do is I want to find what happens if some candidate drops out. That's going to be my next iterates as in Newton's method. What happens if some candidate drops out? So if the election outcome is A, B, C, D, what's the outcome if D drops out, do you think? A, B, C. Isn't that how we always use it? So here's the outcome. It's A, B, C, D. And if D drops out, so I have A, B, C, D. If D drops out, then the outcome should be A, B, C, shouldn't it? It's not. It's C, B, A. It's exactly the opposite. To see that, if D is no longer a candidate, these two people vote for B. B will now have 10 votes. And these 4 people will vote for C. C has 11 votes. It's exactly the opposite. If C drops out instead of D, same phenomenon. Instead of being ABD, it'll be DBA. If B drops out, it will be DCA instead of ABACD. No matter who drops out, it'll be the opposite. Now let me ask you, during personnel time, when you're ranking your candidates, and you have the election outcome A, B, C, D. And if D calls and says, I'm going to Harvard instead, do you have a new election? you still go for A, B, C in the same order. Should you? I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure at all. If two candidates dropped out of here, the outcome again would reverse this. In fact, the theorem is... Oh, you throw in the politics and it gets worse. You know that as well as I do. But I'm trying to look at an idealized situation where we had rational colleagues. We'll see. We'll see in a few minutes. What I want to do here then is you take any number of candidates, and I went up to G. Take any number of candidates you want. And the theorem says the following. Just like in chaos. It says rank them in any way you want, so let's start off with A, B, C, D, E, F, G. It says one candidate drops out. We'll say G drops out. How do you want to rank the rest of them? Any way you want. All right. Rank the remaining candidates. Make it rough on you. C, D, B. Okay, now let's suppose F drops out. And how would you like to rank the candidates? Instead of of the original group. So in other words, F drops out. How would you want to rank them? So F no longer, F says, the heck with it, I'm dropping out. How would you rank these candidates right here? Okay. D, B, C, doesn't matter. But you see what I'm going to do is for each subset of candidates, I'll go around and I'll ask you, what do you think? What do you think? Give me a ranking for each possible subset of candidates. And the theorem says, you want to have some of them tied? That's fine, I don't care. All the way down to pairs. And the theorem says that if you use the plurality vote, I can create an example where that will be the sincere election outcome for the people as they vote over each possible subset. In other words, what are all possible paradoxes from here? As bad as you want them to be. They can be as horrible as you want. Your department uses a runoff, use this to analyze your runoff, and you see how lousy your election outcomes can be. With the same voters. Got it. Anything you want, yep. Yeah, but I have to know in advance what you want before I can construct the example. But yeah, whatever you want for any number of candidates. And in fact, the result is then, well, maybe the problem is that we're using the plurality vote, because the plurality vote only gives one point to my first place candidate, and it's ignoring all of my lower ranked candidates. Yeah. Not that large. No, there's no bound, because there's no bound on n. What happens is that, don't forget, with n voters, there's n factorial preferences. And so the combinatorics goes into the rankings. So surprisingly few voters give you horrible outcomes. Okay. You have to change the number of voters. And in fact, but if you have, for example, three candidates and you have over four voters, five or more, you can get almost any paradox you want. That's not very large at all. Yeah. No. Yeah, but then, no, that's not it. What happens is that, so notice what happens in my example here. To get an A, B, C, D election, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 types of voters. To create this example here, I may need to use something like 30 types of voters. Okay, 30 people, and they have different rankings, and it's how they cancel. And in fact, if we use different weights, like why not, instead of 1, 0, 0, 0, why not give 8, 4, 3, 1, 0, 0, 0. Why don't we use different weights for the choice? The theorem states that things can get better, not much. It states you go for each one of these sets and tell me the voting procedure, the ballot procedure. Go down, call Florida, find out how to count ballots. What you do is you tell me how many points you're going to give to your first place candidate, your second place candidate, your third place candidate, etc. Then for these, tell me how many points you want to give for this set of candidates, how many you want to give for your first, second, third, fourth, etc. And for each of them, you tell me the procedure. Since I'm talking about numbers, this defines a huge, huge vector in a huge dimensional space. And the answer is that with the exception of an proper algebraic subset, whatever that word means, in other words, with the exception of a rare set of choices of weights, coordinated weights, anything you want can happen. That even that this set right here, by the way, turns out to be a bad choice. But whatever weights you use, there's a rare, you got to have a rare choice of weights, will give you a good answer, algebraic subset. Other than that, everything can be wrong as you want. What about your elections in your department? I keep coming back to that. You shouldn't worry about it. If it's an algebraic subset where you can't get all possible paradoxes, then the question is, what procedure is this? And the one procedure which turns out to be better than any other in reducing the number and kinds of paradoxes. So this is a bifurcation theorem then. The numbers and kinds of theorems of paradoxes is called the Borda count, named after John Charles de Borda, a mathematical physicist at in the 1770s. What he did is he was the one who was on the committee to create this thing called the metric system. He invented an astronomical device which was used to define the metric system. He fought in the war for independence on our side. And a fascinating guy. But he said, why don't we just give 3-2-1-0 if there's four candidates? Or if there's seven candidates, why not give 6-5-4-3-2-1-0? Why not do that? And it turns out there's been a big debate that started with Laplace and Borda and Condorcet and all the others, but it turns out by use of this method that it is the unique procedure which minimizes the number and kinds of paradoxes that can occur by far. Oh, there's still paradoxes. Exactly, precisely. And if you take your Borda count, and if you have six candidates, and you write down all possible, you know, listings of words, you know, we can get a paradox, so that'll call that a dictionary. Mm-hmm. And then you write down your dictionary, all possible paradoxes, you know, rankings you can have for the plurality count. You can look at those numbers to see which one's worse than the other, how much worse. For example, if the plurality count had twice as many paradoxes as the Borda count, it would be twice as bad. For six candidates, only six candidates now, what do you think the number is, the multiple? 10 to the 50th. 10 to the 50th. And that number alone shows you why numerical schemes would never be able to handle this problem right here, because for six candidates, you take everything that goes wrong with the Borda count, and there are 10 to the 50th modifications of it, of things that go wrong with the plurality vote. And there's no way a computer, yet if the world's fastest computer, what, 10 to the 12th operations per second, multiply times the number of seconds since the Big Bang, hey, we haven't even started. Okay. So there is no way to handle these. This is kind of a vertical, so I want to show you something else that happens by use of these. And then we're going to turn to the what can go right. How bad can it get? Well, let's talk about those positional methods. Here's a simple 10 voter. So see, here's an example of only 10 voters here. And A wins, D gets 3 votes, C gets 2 votes. So if we use different procedures, if we vote for one candidate, A is the winner. Vote for 2. B is the winner. Vote for 3. C is the winner. Use the Borda count. 3-2-1-0. D is the winner. I mean, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. The board account, this one right here is where you vote for one, so that's one. Vote for two, where you vote 1-1. Vote for three, 1-1-1. Board account is 3-2-1-0. And what you can is, with a simple 10-voter example, anyone can win, depending on which procedure you use. The theorem. The theorem is that if you have n candidates, I can create examples by choosing different weights. You know how different ways to tally the ballots. So that you will get up to n factorial minus n minus 1 factorial different election rankings without ties. If I have four candidates, that's 24 minus 6 equals 18. Here's an example. By using a different weights here with this example, this 10-voter example, it turns out you can get 18 different strict election rankings. If we're three candidates, you can get 3 factorial minus 2 factorial is 4. You can get 4 different rankings, and the beverage example is an example of something where you get 4 different election rankings as you change the weight. The if you just get up to 10, or if you get up to 14, this says for 14 candidates, and remember in France you have 20 for president. If you have 14 candidates, that means you can get billions of outcomes. 14 factorial minus 13 factorial, you can get billions of outcomes with a simple example, just depending on how you change your weights. You can have examples where each candidate is the winner with some procedure and the absolute loser with others. Do you trust your election outcomes? I sure don't. And what's the likelihood of this happening? Of this particular phenomenon right here, for three candidates, it's about 70% of the time. About 70% of the time, you will have, as you change the weights, the election ranking will change. Not necessarily as dramatically as I stated, but it will change. When you get to four candidates, it's almost 90%. When you get to six candidates, it's about 99% of the profiles. So in other words, what happens is, we go back to my original statement, that the election outcomes more likely reflects what procedure we're using rather than what the people want. In fact, it's so bad that I volunteer often during a lecture. Sure, lots of them. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And then you narrow it down, then you come to mind where you drop off candidates, don't you? And where the person you narrowed might have won with every other combination. So I have to use another approach. Yeah. That's right. But you're talking about strategic voting, and I'm talking about, even if we're honest, what happens. Oh, yeah. And I want to find what are the procedures that reflect what the voters want. That's what my goal is. Yeah. Go ahead. Aha, we'll come to that. That's his question. We'll come to that in a second. In fact, it's so bad about choosing procedures and how they all can come that for a price, I will come to your organization. You tell me who you want to win. I will go around and talk to everyone and find their preferences among the candidates. I will design a procedure, a democratic procedure, so that your candidate wins. Hey, never mind, it's academic money. In fact, let's see if we can do so. Let's try an extreme example. Do you see someone here who happens to be disliked in this example? I have 10 voters that believe this. 10 voters this, 10 voters this. Do you see anyone? C looks pretty happy, but look at the H. Everybody prefers C, D, E, F, G. to H. Can you see how to elect H? Can you see how to elect H in this election? And if you were in Chicago, you would come up with strategies. but we aren't in Chicago, so I'll come up with a strategy. The strategy is the following. Let's have an election between G and F. Between G and F, F wins unanimously. Let's have an election between F and E. E wins unanimously. E and D. D wins unanimously. D and C. C wins unanimously. C and B. B wins at least 2/3. B and A. A wins by 2/3. And H. H wins. How about if you had me in your organization and it was unanimous? Everybody liked the same candidate. Had the same ranking, no difference. All right, I'd have to work a little harder to get my money. But it could be done. I have unanimity here. Everyone prefers C, D, E, F, G, H. If I came into the organization like that, I would sit down and talk to people and figure two alternatives, A and B, which would divide the people like here, and I would elect H. Now, you might be sitting down there smug saying, well, at least in our department, we don't do that. We vote by consensus.
You have never hired anybody unanimous.
Sure. Haven't hired anyone in 10 years, is that? So, let's take a look. I'm going to show you about consensus, what can go wrong. Mathematicians are very, very easygoing people. We never have troubles, do we? There's only one place that we have difficulties, and that is when we come to selecting a calculus book. Something as minor as a calculus book in any math department I've ever seen across the country can cause blood to flow, lots of blood to flow. And you can hear the discussion. What they're saying is, well, let's look at G and F. G's a good book. Oh, but F. G, you get a hernia carrying it to class. Let's go for F. Well, okay, F is pretty good, but look at E. It does the limit process better. Unanimously, we go to F. No votes, consensus. You've heard this discussion. And now, what about E and D? Well, D has nicer pictures. Well, the meeting's getting pretty long. H, okay, we'll take H. You can get an inferior choice without ever you know it's inferior. We had one in the math department at Northwestern for 10 years. An inferior choice. I won't tell you which one. But we never understood how we got it. That's how we got it. And let me tell you another thing is that if you want to be Machiavelli, it also tells you what to do. It says if you get at least a little bit support for your alternative, get the big ones, the big boys to shoot each other down until the end, and make sure to get yours in at the end. And every time I tell that, somebody comes up after and says, I hate to say this, but that's what I've been doing for a long time. On there. You were raising your hand? Uh, 50-60% of the choices of profiles that you can have. Now it depends on which procedure. The procedure which turns out to be the worst by far is the plurality vote. If you use the probability measures, it's the worst. It gives you the highest probability paradoxes. And as you get closer and closer to vote count, the likelihood breaks down. What happens now is I want to, in the last few minutes I have, I want to quickly outline how to answer your question. What is the best procedure, and yours, what is the best procedure? You see, one of the questions is I don't see any mechanism. What the problem is people, we want to find the right mechanism that captures what the people want. And the rest of the quote is, I don't see any mechanism that will hand over the presidency to Al Gore. The Republicans stole it, fair and square. I love that quote. Well, we have on elections is we have seen what goes wrong, and after I developed, you know, the theorems that I showed you, finding which now characterizes all possible paradoxes that can occur, I've found what that algebraic subset is, so I can now characterize all possible paradoxes that can occur. The next issue is what goes right? I can show that the board account has the least number of paradoxes and everything else, but that doesn't answer your question. It doesn't answer your question about, is this what the voters really want? So what I did is started looking here at symmetry. And here I started looking at symmetry groups to try to answer this question. Let's suppose, you see, Mike is very happily married. Well, what happens is he and his wife disagree on a lot of things. And so what happens is it turns out that on election day, Mike believes A, B, C, his wife believes C, B, A. Just exactly the opposite. And they said, look, why argue? Let's go to the beach. Our votes are going to cancel. Will they? Will they? Take a look. If they vote for one candidate, A gets one vote, C gets one vote, B gets none. So the ranking will be A tied with C, better than B. Suppose they vote for two candidates. Then what happens is A gets one vote, B gets two votes, C gets one vote. Then it's B, the opposite ranking. In fact, the only procedure that will give you a tie that recognizes the Z2 symmetry, this tie, is the board account. It's the only one. If I give 2, 1, 0, I give 2 points for A, 1 here, 2 for C, and 1 A for B here, and it ties. Any other choice of weights will give you a distortion one way or another. And what this suggests then is that voters' choices really should lead to ties with certain symmetry groups. And some procedures can, and other procedures cannot, recognize that symmetry. And that is why we have paradoxes. Remember my wine beer party? Let's suppose I started off with this. With 4 people preferring this, 0 people preferring this, and 1 person preferring this. The outcome is clear, wine, beer, milk. How did I create it? I added opposites, 5 people here and 5 people here. I added just opposites. Beer, wine, milk, beer, wine, milk. It should be a tie. But the plurality vote cannot recognize that symmetry group, that orbit of that symmetry group. And so I can create any kind of paradox I want by just looking at the various symmetry groups of preferences that should be a tie, and then finding the procedures which will do this. I think I got time for one more example and then I'll quit. Pardon? Okay. What happens then is let's take a look at a very simple problem. Suppose I have 3 forces, equal forces pushing on it. 3 equal forces standing on it. It's an equilibrium. But suppose I said, well, I can't do 3 things. You've got that freshman student who comes in and says, I can't analyze 3 things at one time. I want to analyze only 2. So they choose 2 of them, and what do they get? They get it's pushing off this way, or it's pushing off that way, or it's pushing off that way. That same procedure, that same symmetry, Z3 symmetry, or a 120-degree symmetry, causes all possible voting paradoxes for pairs. Let me show you. I'm putting a wheel up here on the wall, nailed right down. I'm going to put down the rankings, A, B, C. There's the ranking. A's in first, B's in second, C's in third. Now I'm going to grab the wheel and spin it, so I have a 1, 2, 3. B, C, A. And I'm going to spin it once more. What do we have? Is that each candidate is in first place once, second, and last. First, second, and last, first, second, and last. There is no way to say which candidate is ahead of the other. That 120 degrees from the ranking wheel shows that this force diagram is precisely the same. Now suppose we analyze this election like that freshman student that says, I can't handle 3, so let me look at only 2. If they do, if we look at the AB election, we have A beats B twice. And so the election outcome will be A greater than B. And it will be then B greater than C. And it will be C greater than A. You'll get precisely the same cyclic event, cyclic behavior. In other words, what happens is that pairwise vote by looking at pairs, it ignores the fact when there's more candidates, Z3 doesn't have a subgroup of order 2. Okay, it doesn't recognize, it cannot recognize the symmetry that it should be a tie. And we know what happens when you break symmetry. You get a cycle. And that's precisely what happens here. So what happens to handle, if you have more candidates, you're in a higher dimensional space, you're using higher symmetry groups. So what's the approach of analyzing it and finding what should be natural ties and what are not? The approach is to look at the various symmetry groups in each space, which should give you a tie. Then look at what it does for subsets. And if you don't get a tie down there, you recognize precisely why. The reason you don't get a paradox is you have it. Surprisingly, this simple argument by looking at the various symmetry groups turns out to characterize all possible voting paradoxes that can occur. You give me any procedures, such as the one you stated, I'm going to then look at the various symmetry groups and figure out exactly how to create an example showing, ooh, that wasn't a good idea. Okay? The only procedure which throws in the kernel that cancels out all these symmetries is the border count. It's the only procedure that cancels everything and puts it in there. And so it's arguable that the border count is the only procedure which truly reflects by these arguments what the voters want. Mm-hmm. And it has a large number of good things, but I've overstayed my time by about 1 minute or so. So I want to thank you very much.
Well, I propose that I hold by email tomorrow an election, a vote on what is the most interesting colloquium this election.
What were the arguments
of Laplace?
Yeah, that's fascinating. And as I was stating earlier, as I was reading through the minutes of the French Academy, what happened is that Borda said that the election of members to the French Academy was based on the plurality vote and was saying we're getting lousy people elected. And so he showed his procedure with an example. He didn't have a theory. It wasn't a theory until now. But what he did is he gave an example. And so what happened is they then started using the border count until a new Academy member came in and wanted to go back to the plurality vote because it gave distorted outcomes. The new Academy member, Napoleon Bonaparte. But Laplace and the other people said that, well, you know, you gave this weights 2-1-0. Why this? Why this choice? Why not 6-5-0? What is this? And the argument is we're kind of splitting the odds or things like this. But it was more philosophical and there was no mathematical or scientific reason. And now we see it's because of the symmetry group arguments and pragmatic. It's still a plurality vote there, yeah. That's right. Sure. In fact, what he's stating is another theorem, which also is due to the dimensionality of space. If you have two candidates, you can either be for or against this candidate. That's really when you normalize, you're down to a one-dimensional space. And there aren't many directions on one-dimensional. You go in one direction or the other. But when you have three candidates, you're in a six-dimensional space. Because there's three ways to choose your first place, second place, third place. You can normalize it, get to a five-dimensional space, and boy, are there directions in five dimensions. And it's because of this higher dimensionality that all procedures can be strategically manipulated. All procedures can be strategically manipulated if there are more than this. The procedure which is the most likely to be manipulated with small groups of people is the plurality vote. The one which is least likely with small numbers of people is the board account. Yeah. But if you have a large, yeah, that's a different question. You're saying that, can I come up with? You're asking a different question. You're saying, can I figure how to manipulate? And I'm saying that which ones could be more successful. So now we go to the second question. And the second question is, can we create procedures which minimize figuring out strategies? Which is the second question. And the answer here is, remember when I started off, I said an instant runoff? I said an instant runoff because that cuts down on the strategies. Let me give you a runoff election where there are strategies. They're called the primaries. The Democrats have one primary, the Republicans have another. Hey, Gore's going to get in, I'm going to go vote in the Republican primary to try to get a weak candidate. That is the strategy you will use in a runoff election, is to vote, if you think your person is secure to get in the runoff, vote for the weakest alternative. Okay? But if you have an instant runoff where you have to put things down, then what happens is, what are all the possibilities? You need too much information. You can cook up similar things with the board account. So if you want, that's really is another hour lecture. You don't want to hear that. Okay, but an excellent question. Sure. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Once you understand what symmetry groups to look for, then for all realistic, so this paper right here was just published, you know, showing what happens for any number of candidates. But once you know what symmetry groups and how to go about it, you can look at any of those pragmatic situations. You've all had this. You've gone in there and you had a vote for judges. Who are all these guys? No idea. Okay, so that's a very pragmatic type question. But once you understand this, you can now find the procedure which will minimize the number of paradoxes and do so. You're just looking at different symmetry groups, that's all. Beg your pardon? Yeah, the 435. I really have gone past my time. That was the next slide. But the reason the 435, let me quickly give you a statement, is that it's due to a mathematical paradox which happened in the state of Alabama. Remember, what we used to do is kept changing the size of the House of Representatives. With the population figures for the size for the state of Alabama in the year 1870, with 299 representatives, Alabama was entitled to 7 seats. So they said, let's jump it up to 300 to find out who would get the extra representative. Alabama went down to 6. Same population figures, just a mathematical construct, and what happens is it goes down. Well, if it happened to Alabama, that's okay. But it happened to Maine, and it happened to Colorado, and a large number of other states. In fact, as I showed, with probability 1, you have to expect an Alabama paradox to occur for population figures for some house size. You're going to run into it. And in fact, that's where I related it with chaotic dynamics and showed that that's where you can get this fact. And I'll show you later, if you're interested, what happens on it. Anyone later, but I don't want to prolong this. But I'll just tell you the story. In 1910, what they did is they said, let's now try to choose the size of the House of Representatives. Larger than the current House size, and large enough so we don't end up with an Alabama paradox with the current population figures. That was 433. There was a territory of New Mexico and a territory of Arizona, 435. And so it came from this mathematical paradox, this fact that why we have 435 representatives in the House of Representatives. Then in 1920, there was a big scandal, problems in 1930. So FDR, and during his administration, was fixed at 435. But it came from a mathematical paradox that we now know comes from chaotic dynamics, that all the ways they try to do is to fix it when it's gray. During the, what they did is we don't use the same method anymore, we have a new one. We had people like John von Neumann and several others, Huntington, a mathematician from Harvard, and several others, that looked to find a better procedure. Instead of reevaluating each time, let's start off with 50 states. Each state gets a representative, then we find the most deserving other state, a fraction of the representatives per population or something like that. Oh, California gets the 51st, then let's find who deserves the 52nd, etc. That's the procedure we use today. Except California probably will be entitled to about 56.2 or 3 representatives in next. And it is possible for the current procedure to either round California's 56.1 or 2 down to 48 or up to 65. Again, due to geometric peculiarities in higher dimensional spaces and the fact that there's chaos which is involved inside there. Let me tell you, this area is social science. I mean, I was bred on the n-body problem and all of these things, and I'm discovering this area of the social science, mathematics of the social sciences. Wow, are there some peculiarities in there. And that's really primarily due to the higher dimensionality of the problems which got there. No, in fact, it's 50 years old. 50 years old this year. Ken Arrow, who's now at Stanford, beautiful, beautiful result, stated that let's take a look. And his theorem says that you can rank the three candidates any way you want, as long as they're transitive. No rank, nothing on there. And we want to have a transitive outcome. Now, what are the only conditions we're going to put on our procedure? Well, let's suppose we find that everybody likes Alice better than Barbara. Boy, the societal ranking better not have Barbara ahead of Alice. Okay, so what happens is, with unanimity, if there's unanimity on pairs, then that should be unanimity on the outcome. And the last one is why it's just unanimity. If we're going to rank the two of you, wouldn't it be outrageous if we say that, well, you would have been ranked over him if more people liked him. So let's just say the societal ranking of any two people is based on what people think of those two. Lots of procedures must satisfy that. So Arrow sat down to try to find all of them. Found there was one. A dictatorship. Okay. So it means if you don't have a dictatorship, you're violating one of those conditions. Now, what goes wrong with Arrow? Actually just finished a book on that. And it turns out that Arrow's theorem does not mean what we have thought for the last half century. It really is a symmetry group type situation. Remember I put up that Z3 symmetry, you know, that cyclic symmetry over there? If you take out all of those things out of there, Arrow's theorem doesn't hold now. Now there's a lot of procedures. It turns out that this, I'm going to look at just the two of you without worrying about him, ignores the symmetry of how profiles can be in a three-dimensional space. And if you say that, well, it throws away the information, and I'm not going to explain why, that the people have transitive preferences. And so if you throw in any condition that we look at just what people think of the two of you and a condition that verifies that your transitive preferences, then you get a large number of procedures. So that's a recent result that just reverses what we thought.